Welcome to episode 5 of the Metaphysics of Physics podcast. I am Ashna, your host and guide through the hallowed halls of the philosophy of science. Thanks for tuning in. With this show, we are fighting for a more rational world, mostly by looking through the lens of the philosophy of science. We raise awareness of issues within the philosophy of science and present alternative and rational approaches. You may want to subscribe via iTunes or any of our other subscription methods. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. You can do all of this from the show notes or the media player on the website at metaphysicsofphysics.com. Today we will go over some questions. Although we have not yet received many questions from our audience, we will go over some questions which you might have or we might be asked at some point. You may consider these frequently anticipated questions. We would like to answer questions actually sent in and do this kind of Q&A format more often. However, for that, we will need your questions. Please submit them on the website link provided or email them to questions@metaphysicsofphysics.com. This set of questions is about the position of metaphysics of physics on some of the popular fields of science, specifically physics and the philosophy of science. We are also going to start answering Quora questions on the show. Dwayne Davies, the founder and content creator of this show, has a Quora account and has answered several relevant questions already. Check the show notes for a link to his Quora account and check out some of the answers to relevant Quora questions. Okay, let's get into it. What do you think is the biggest threat to science today? Bad philosophy. That is ultimately the biggest threat to pretty much anything. One's fundamental philosophy determines whether or not they follow rational ideas and what kind of morality and convictions they hold. If one follows a rational philosophy, then it is likely that their ideas will be rational and their actions moral. If they follow irrational philosophies, they will hold irrational ideas and their actions will be morally questionable. But the question is about the biggest threat to science. And the answer is still bad philosophy. Why is this? Well, one's metaphysics and epistemology are key. If one believes in the primacy of an objective reality, independent of the wishes and desires of the human mind, then they are more likely to approach science objectively and rationally. If one believes that they can gain knowledge of reality, then they will probably do all they can to learn about reality. If one believes that reality is unknowable, then they will not seek a full knowledge of reality and act as though at least some things are not knowable. If one believes in the primacy of reality, then one knows that reality does not obey one's wishes and that reality is not subject to consciousness. One does not maintain the metaphysical primacy of abstractions. That is, one does not think that reality is explained by appealing to abstractions. Quantum theory and relativity offer non-physical explanations of things like gravity and the nature of light and how it interacts with things. String theory, despite decades of intense research, is non-intelligible and makes no testable claims. A lot of modern cosmology is little better. It has been decades since the development of the Standard Model in the 70s, since we have seen any major progress in the fundamentals of physics. Why is this? Yes, this stuff is hard, but this is not the main reason. The main reason is that most scientists are operating according to irrational philosophical premises and are doing bad science. They are interpreting experiments wrong and coming to conclusions which do not contribute to the understanding of reality. The biggest threat to science is bad philosophy, and that threat is impeding people's ability to do good science. We do not just see this in physics. We see this in the environmental sciences, where many scientists start with a conclusion and then try to represent results in a way that supports their conclusion. We see this in computer science, where computer scientists do not understand the nature of the mind and intelligence and try to create computers with intelligence. Even though if they understood the nature of the mind and computers, they would know that they could not do this. Science does not operate in a vacuum. One's ability to do good science is only as good as their philosophical premises. If they have bad philosophical premises, then they will reach poor conclusions in science, if they know how to do science at all, if they even value science at all. The worse a culture's philosophical premises, the less rational science they can make, and the less scientific progress they can make. It may eventually become so bad that they do not value true science and abandon science for mysticism. So, yes, bad philosophy is the biggest threat to science today. What are some of the stances of metaphysics of physics that almost nobody agrees with? Pretty much anything on this show could qualify, but I suppose that is not much of an answer. Here is one example which almost nobody agrees with. Even several people who otherwise agree with things being said on metaphysics of physics disagree with this. There are a lot of people that disagree that it is invalid to assert that there are sets with an infinite size or sets which are infinite yet larger than other sets. So-called infinite sets do not have a size. They are simply infinite. So-called infinite sets do not have a size. They are simply infinite. To say that they have a size implies that you can count and quantify all of their elements. But you can't. That is what it means to be an infinite set. So, if infinite sets have no size, then there is no basis for comparing their sizes. And there goes one of the proofs that there are different sizes of infinity. This means that the set of natural numbers, the set of real numbers, etc., have no sizes. They are simply infinite. It makes no sense to say that there are more real numbers than natural numbers. No, neither set has any size, so you cannot speak of one being larger. There are proofs that go something like this. Take the natural numbers from 1 to 3. There are 3 of them. But take all the real numbers from 1 to 3. There are more of them. Now take any number of natural numbers from 1 to x. There are always more real numbers between 1 and x, so therefore there are more real numbers than natural numbers. This does not work. It does not prove that the infinite set of real numbers is larger than the infinite set of natural numbers. All the other proofs share fundamentally the same flaw. Assuming that infinity is something other than a potentiality, and then assuming infinite sequences and series have a size. But they don't. Therefore, you cannot use them to prove there are different sizes of infinity. Infinity does not have a size. Something is infinite means it has a certain potentiality. There are no sizes of potentialities. Therefore, there are no sizes of infinity. Talking about countable or non-countable infinities does not salvage the claim of sizes of infinity. By countability, they are really referring to mapping between elements of sets, not size or quantity. Mathematicians do not use infinity in the same sense used here, which is a potentiality to progress in a sequence. Their definition of infinity is vague and sometimes incoherent. That is one example. At least some of the listeners will disagree on this point as well. Perhaps infinity is something we should talk about in a future podcast episode as well and offer a more elaborate argument. But for now, this will do. What do you think about the mathematics involved in quantum physics and its interpretation? Where do you think the problem lies in this field? This is a very problematic area of physics. But before we go further, we need to draw a distinction here between the mathematics of quantum physics and the physical interpretation of that mathematics. The mathematics of quantum theory is remarkably successful, and its results have enabled a great many advancements in physics, other areas of science, and technology. This is the area of quantum physics which has been the most successful. Using this and its predictions has allowed us to gain a very good understanding of many of the relationships between things at the subatomic level, and to develop technologies such as the transistor, lasers, atomic clocks, and so forth. The mathematics of quantum theory has been vindicated time and time again. So at this point, it would be fairly silly to question it. At least to question the more fundamental and important equations, such as the Schrödinger equation and so forth. But the problem is in much of the interpretation of the mathematics. While a great many of the predictions made using the mathematics of quantum theory have been verified, that does not justify many of the interpretations of the experimental evidence that have been reached. Central to quantum theory is the idea that subatomic entities like electrons have a dual identity, that they are both waves and particles at the same time, and that not all of their properties are definite. Now, how does one justify such bizarre claims? They usually point out that their experiments verify that these things are the case. But the experiments do not in fact show this. Nothing can demonstrate that an electron is a wave and a particle at the same time, or that it is inflected with vague properties, or that a photon can magically teleport from A to B without crossing the intervening distance. Yes, the experiments probably do demonstrate something, but one has to be careful how they are interpreted. One always has to be careful. In fact, the manner in which one interprets an experiment is contingent on their metaphysics, which the interpretations of these experiments illustrates. If you have a rational metaphysics, you will tend to interpret your experiments in a way that does not allow for contradictions. You will know that if you think you see such things, that either your experiment is flawed or that you have reached a faulty conclusion somewhere. The problem with quantum physics is that there are a lot of bizarre interpretations of experiments. This is because the founders of quantum theory all started with irrational philosophies and then conducted experiments which seemed to give strange results, such as the apparent wave-particle duality of light. Instead of questioning whether or not their experiments actually show that light is both a particle and a wave, they chose to believe that is what the experiments show. Why? Because they have an irrational metaphysics that leads them to expect that reality is full of contradictions and is, as Bohr liked to put it, quote, inflicted with a kind of vagueness, unquote. That is the problem with quantum physics. While it has undoubtedly had many successes, its explanations of the things it attempts to explain are mystical and or non-physical, and thus frequently do not contribute to a proper understanding of reality. In fact, this is worse than offering no explanation. Now, it should be noted that there is a reason quantum theory is the way it is. It is not because reality is really like that and we have to accept it. It is because that is what the founders of quantum theory expected to find. It is amazing what you can prove when you assume your conclusion and then go out to prove it. It is widely believed that the strange claims of quantum theory have been proven beyond any reasonable doubt. This is not so. The experiments do not, in fact, demonstrate what most allege that they do, and no experiment ever could. That would require reality to not operate as it does. What do you think about the mathematics and interpretations of special and general relativity? These theories suffer much the same problem as does quantum theory. While the mathematics of both of these theories have been vindicated by an endless array of experiments, the interpretation of this evidence is highly suspect. Without the math, we would not have things like GPS. At this point, there is not a lot of point questioning the mathematics, as it seems to be pretty solid. But let's go into the interpretations again. Special relativity reifies time by treating it as a dimension. But this is invalid. Dimensions are a mathematical concept used to study relationships. They are not physical aspects of the universe, but special relativity treats it as one. Special relativity also introduces a major element of subjectivism. It denies that things have objective properties such as length and asserts that these properties have different properties for different observers moving at different speeds. For instance, the length of a ruler is said to have different lengths for different observers moving at different speeds. It denies that entities have objective properties dependent on their nature and instead asserts that the properties of entities exist in mutually exclusive states for different observers. This is pure subjectivism and it is invalid. In doing so, it offers a non-physical explanation of apparent effects such as the slowing of clocks and the like. A non-physical explanation is no explanation at all. General relativity asserts that gravity is the warping of space-time, but neither space nor time are things that can warp. They are relational concepts. Asserting that gravity can warp is again offering a non-physical explanation of gravity and again is worse than offering no explanation. So again, neither theory offers a proper physical explanation of the relevant phenomena, hence their interpretations do not offer any real insight or understanding into how the universe really works. What do you think of string theory and does it have a viable future? String theory does not qualify as a theory. A theory is a well-established scientific explanation of something. But nothing in string theory has been established. Worse than this, nobody knows how to experimentally verify anything in string theory. So at this point, nothing in string theory can be established. Which is fairly moot, since nobody really knows what string theory means or how one could test it. In fact, string theory makes no definite predictions. So at this stage, it is hard to see how anyone could test string theory. This does not seem to bother a lot of people working on string theory. Many of them are not greatly bothered by the fact that string theory cannot currently be tested. Furthermore, the claims made by string theorists are extremely bizarre. Central to string theory is the idea that reality is composed of 9, 10, or some similar number of dimensions. Not as a mathematical abstraction, but as a fundamental aspect of reality. As if geometry is not an abstract mathematical method used to study relationships, but a concrete physical aspect of reality. String theory treats geometry as though it was a physical part of the universe, but dimensions are not a physical attribute of the universe, and treating them as if they were, explains nothing, and commits the fallacy of reification. It has many of the same problems as quantum theory and relativity. It attempts to explain all of the physics by an appeal to a non-physical explanation. But it gets worse. There are a lot of mathematical issues with string theory. A lot of equations employed by string theory get what you might consider less than convenient answers, such as infinitely large or small values. Not really the kind of answers one would expect or want. So what do? To try to get rid of these infinities? Well, there is a mathematical method called renormalization, which they use to try to get rid of them. This process might be valid in some cases, but certainly not in all. Some of these renormalization processes are crazy. For instance, there is one example which says that if you add up all the positive natural numbers, 1, 2, 3, etc., then you get minus 1 over 12. Now, you don't have to be much of a mathematician to see that this is just insane. And it is, despite the various so-called mathematical proofs of this silly result. What is up with all this? Well, it seems to indicate a desperate attempt to get rid of these infinities. Infinities which probably should not exist in the first place, and which seem to argue that the mathematics of string theory has little or nothing to do with reality. Does string theory have a viable future? No. How could it? Nobody really knows what it means. It is based on nonsensical, non-physical explanations. Its mathematics does not even work and generates a lot of nonsense. And nobody knows how to test it. How a theory with all these problems could have any viable future is very difficult to see. This is a question that was found on Quora. Why are there no more great physicists like Einstein, Newton, Bohr, and Schrödinger in this generation? Are the current problems way too difficult for now? Well, we would like to cast a little doubt on how great Bohr, Schrödinger, and Einstein were. We are not saying that they were not very intelligent people and that they did not make important contributions. Of course they did, despite our severe criticisms of some of their work. But this is not the right place to go into how great these three figures were. Let's leave that for another time. But you can certainly ask us about these criticisms if you want. Why are there no great physicists anymore? Is it because the problems are too hard? If you look at string theory, it certainly seems that the problems are really hard and perhaps too hard. But that has a lot more to do with the philosophical premises of the people trying to answer the questions and the approach they are taking. We are not saying that there are not some hard questions left, but not all questions are good questions. And not all approaches to answering them are the right approaches. Let's take the question of how to unify quantum mechanics and relativity. Who said that there has to be one theory, one set of equations to unify them? People like to assume that there is. But what if there isn't? What if these are separate phenomena and not in any sense unifiable under one theory or set of equations? It sure seems that cosmology has a lot of really hard questions as well. And yes, it does have some hard questions. Some of them are the wrong questions though, such as, what kind of curvature the universe has? Is the universe mathematics? Yes, these are real questions being asked by physicists today. So yes, in a way the problems are too hard, because we might not be asking the right questions. And even when we are not approaching the questions rationally. If you ask the wrong questions, or answer the questions, whether good or bad ones, irrationally, then it is going to be really hard to answer those questions, despite the fact that there is no shortage of brilliant minds in the field. Most of them have been unable to make the kind of progress as many of their famous predecessors. There might be a lot more well-known names if they were asking the right questions and answering them rationally. All right, we are just about done for now. Before I wrap up though, a few more things. If you have not done so already, please check out the website on metaphysicsofphysics.com. You are welcome to send in questions about any of the things talked about in this episode or about irrational stuff in physics or the philosophy of science in general. Send them into questions@metaphysicsofphysics.com. Join us again here in 2 weeks. Next time, we will go over some questions about the show and its production, and I will talk about some of my experiences in and thoughts about physics academia. Thanks for listening. Please tune in for the next episode and start thinking of some questions. Until then, stay rational.